Welcome to Gleaning and Gathering. I'm your host, Eric Heimlich. Today, I'm bringing you another conversation that I had while I traveled to Gatlinburg, Tennessee recently for the Interchurch Holiness Convention. Brother Timothy Cooley has been a real blessing in my life over the years. He has been somebody who's challenged me and my thinking, and it was just a great privilege and pleasure to catch up to him and to talk with him about some of the things that he's wrestling with these days. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I certainly did. I'm here today with my friend Timothy Cooley from a variety of different backgrounds, but I guess you're most known for being at Penview Bible Institute, probably.
Yes, academic dean.
Academic dean for a number of years there, and we are here together in Gatlinburg, and just wanted to share a few minutes here together today. So, brother, talk about where you're at right now and what God's teaching you.
Well, in the line of being Great Commission dominant, which I believe every Bible college must be Great Commission dominant, but I really can see no Christian ever has permission not to be Great Commission focused. Mm. So even Christian liberal arts should be Great Commission dominant, but pretty often they're more on the cultural mandate than they are on the Great Commission. But especially Bible colleges must be Great Commission dominant, and so that's the whole focus. Probably the greatest area that the Lord's working on me just lately is in knowing and being known. And I would go back to what Methodist class meetings were promoting and seeing happen, trying to find a way for that to work with people today. Not so much the interrogation that some people have thought was the format, as the open-hearted response. And yes, we ask the questions, but rather than intimidating or interrogating, it's more of an how much will that person open his or her heart to let us see inside? Because somehow when we become known, it changes us. And even to reference my wife of 52 years, you know, she changed me.
Yeah.
Being loved by an honorable woman and loving her, knowing and being known, changed me.
Yeah.
And so the same thing must be happening with Christian brothers and sisters in every dimension, but especially there should be a circle around us of people that are really knowing us and we're knowing them. Temptation loses a whole lot of its sparkle if we just know someone else knows us and we're not completely alone.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer really spoke to that, and you know, there's a great quote from him, and I'm not going to be able to pull up the quote, but basically that we need that kind of connection to others in order to really truly find even forgiveness. You know, when I confess my sins to God who knows me, there's one level. And yet when I make that same confession in the presence of a brother who is able to affirm and to help us, again, I'm not saying it like he said it, but you're probably familiar with that.
Yes, his life together.
Yes. There's real power in that, and the kind of spiritual formation that happened in early Methodism that took rough, rugged people straight out of the dregs of society, transformed them, and then made them into leaders within the church.
So when it was working right, the large number of Methodists every week were testifying on a deep soul-to-soul level, here's where I am spiritually. Not the kind of a testimony that would fit in a public service,
right?
But the kind of a testimony that really opens the heart.
And the kind of testimony that really leads to radical life change in an ongoing, sustained way, which was really the key to Methodism.
So talking with a small group and opening a question, as I'm thinking of a real small group that where this happened, you know, is there anybody in your life with whom you need to be reconciled?
Yeah.
Well, it was just amazing. Now, that wasn't the first time we met, but it was just amazing to see the guards drop and say, well, yes, here's the situation, and we begin to explore that. but then also to explore their own father relationships and then see how they've been mirroring things their father did or didn't do with them. Sometimes they were trying to do something different, but still there's a basic pattern that kind of goes back to scripts they learned in childhood. And then they begin to realize I'm holding my family off, or I'm not letting them into my heart, or I'm not getting into their heart. So then watching that relationship develop, because I'm really convinced that the way we relate to God is exactly the same way as we relate to other people.
Yeah.
On a gut level, deep, deep inside of us. Now, there are people who kind of compensate. They have no close human relationship, and so they have a lot of religious activities. But really, even in research, when you explore down into what's happening all the way at the gut level, they're going through religious exercises, but the way they really relate to God is they're pretty afraid he's not really there for me.
Yeah.
So when we can transform our own perception, there are people around me who are really there for me. They care about me, and I'm open to them. We're able to open to God in a new way.
That's powerful.
It transforms our walk with God.
The thing that concerns me, I guess, as I've looked on, is we've kept the Wesleyan doctrine without the Wesleyan practice. And it's been something that has been incredibly interesting to me. Well, interesting is the wrong word, but sad to me.
Yeah.
To see the ways in which, in general, and again, I'm speaking with a very broad brushstroke, but we have maintained a Wesleyan doctrine as a conservative holiness movement, but by and large have given up the class meeting, the bands, the surrounding underpinning that made Methodism a real powerhouse in its early days. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, in 2005, I was trying to look up a Wesley quote, because I remember Leslie Marsden making the point that there are essentials and prudentials, and that if we lose the prudentials, we'll also find we lose the essentials. And in my mind, it was always interpreted that meant if we lose the separation standards, we also lose the real spirit of what made Methodism true.
Uh-huh.
And I just happened to come across a Kevin Watson paper where he was saying the meat of that concern was that Wesley was saying if we lose the Methodist class meeting system, we're going to lose the whole faith, the whole what makes Methodists different. And I still think that the separation standards are in that mix, but I came to see more vividly when we lose that knowing and being known with each other, and that kind of spiritual growth, that kind of walk with each other that opens our heart to God, we lose something very deep, very critical to what Methodism was about.
Yes, yes.
So how can we restore that? And for years it seemed like, I don't know how to restore that. So I was teaching students like this, we ought to be looking at this, we ought to be working at this, but I don't know how to make it happen. And in the last few years, I've seen more of that happen. So I've been in some small groups different times across the years, but I've been able to see more of that happen and watch the guys open up.
Yeah. Well, it's powerful when it happens in the right way. And, you know, I know that many have been fearful of that because of the potential abuse,
right?
The potential for misuse. And, you know, it's the classic example of the three guys in the boat. And, you know, the first guy confesses to, you know, embezzlement, and the second guy to adultery, and the third guy said, well, my problem's with gossip, and I'm really can't wait to get back to the shore. The challenge of how do we help people in a way to really open up and to be known without those paradigms becoming punitive, and without at the same time not just sweeping things under the rug.
Americans are so individualistic, and we're fearful. And there's a high price, especially if you're in leadership, there's a high price if someone betrays you.
Yes.
So the farther you go up in leadership, the less you can afford to talk to anybody about it. So there's no way back. Well, sometimes that amounts to a meteoric fall
that
amazes everybody. But we shouldn't be surprised. because that person was operating so alone, the surprise is they didn't fall sooner.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to just be critical, just once you understand how much we need a brother, sister at close range.
Yeah. I read a book recently called Spiritual Friendship by a man in the 1200s named Alred Rivaulx. And it was a fascinating read, what I would call a spiritual classic. But how have spiritual classics been influential in your life? In what ways have kind of those mentors from the past helped shape you?
A lot on an informal, reading this one, that one, reading secondary literature and then going back into primary literature. So Brother Lawrence, Practice of the Presence of God, mm-hmm. Thomas A. Kempis of the Imitation of Christ, you know, and a number of these things, just trying to understand how that works. And then just working on the understanding of relational spirituality, which scares some people, but that's getting to the concept that this is about open relationships with God and with other people. And attachment theory has been very important in my growth. And then watching it work with different people, sometimes in a group, sometimes just one-to-one. Maybe my age is giving me a little bit of advantage. Mm. So it's over the last number of years, it's become easier to ask those questions and to see there was enough trust that the other person decided, yeah, I'm going to let you in. Mm. And I don't mean I'm some hero or whatever. Mm. It's just when they let me in, there's a bond. There's something that really happens very beneficially. It also happens in me, too. Mm-hmm. So I never want to help equip somebody with pliers and a screwdriver to go tinker around with somebody else. Mm. If they're not willing to be examined, then I don't want to empower them to do that stuff to other people.
That's so good.
And so I have to practice that same thing in my own life. And through the grief of my wife's passing away, I have just also drawn tremendously on that small group, because I keep it pretty well around table. I mean, I'm definitely the senior person, but just allowing them to minister to me, this is not just a one-way direction.
That's so important. And I think that many times the way we've done ministry sometimes has been this, you know, I'm the expert, please don't try this at home. But really that doesn't work for the long haul, does it?
No, we don't change people simply by shouting at them, not even by shouting loudly.
So
we change people by loving them, mm-hmm. and being loved. And it's been powerful to be able to see some of that happen in different people's lives. Mm. I see it with Jesus. I mean, who would be more equipped to reach in with the tools and just fine-tune people? Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that. Mm-hmm. He allowed them to decide how far they were going to let him in.
Yeah.
So the rich young ruler walked away, and Jesus was grieved. Mm-hmm. But he didn't chase him down and choke him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that many times, you know, that balance between how do we help people and yet not take away agency? How do we do what we do without taking away choice and freedom? And many times that, you know, even in the circles that we've walked in, you know, how many times have we had someone who begins to change and then there's a reaction on our part? And I say our part meaning our you know, we're going to, you're canceled. You're no longer.
Yes.
And then that reaction that happens on the opposite side, like which comes first? Did they lose their community and then they lost their belief system?
Yeah.
Or did the loss of that community precede throwing away?
So I think some key principles, unless I have loved you deeply, it would be wrong for me to try to change you, because I would try to change you to make you more like me.
Right.
I would try to change you to make you less inconvenient to me, so that you, if you're my convert, so that you won't embarrass me. I would try to change you from the outside in when the Lord wants to change you from the inside out. So how do I help facilitate that change in the people? Not dominate it, not drive it, not manipulate. Intensely against leadership as manipulation as leadership.
Yes, yes.
So how can I help people to see this is what I need to be, this is what God wants me to do, and I accept it and I allow the Lord to change me and I allow my brothers and sisters to see inside and help facilitate that change.
Yeah, and to do that willingly without just the fear that if I don't conform, I'm going to be excluded.
Yes.
Which I think that kind of spiritual abuse has been unfortunate, to say the least. But the ways in which that long-term plays out doesn't really lead to people having a deep faith that they are then passionate about passing on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not sustainable.
If we manipulate them into being like we want them to be, it doesn't stick.
It doesn't. Yeah, it really doesn't. Well, you're someone who has really given me food for thought every time I've talked to you over the years, and it's not been nearly often enough, but as our paths have crossed, I've asked you different times, so what are you reading these days, or what are you thinking about? And I've always been just very appreciative of your graciousness and of your willingness to share, and you know, the depth of intellectual ability that you have, and the rigor that you've continued to pursue knowledge and the desire to know and to learn more has always been something that I've really appreciated about you.
Thank you.
But also your heart for people in that, and I just wanted to say you're one of my heroes, and I'm just
thankful
for the way in which you have faithfully modeled life and ministry. So
thank you, and I've never forgotten hearing you sing a song about people needing the Lord a long time ago at the close of a message that you preached, and I just really appreciated that heart for people in you.
Well, thank the Lord. Well, thanks for taking time to sit down and talk for a few minutes. And
you're welcome.
Look forward to catching up more in the future.
Thank you.
I've got a few more of these conversations that I had while I was in Gatlinburg that I look forward to bringing you here in the next few days and weeks as I get a chance to edit and present them to you. But I just want to say again, thank you so much to Brother Cooley for taking time. Thank you for taking time to listen today. If you have not yet taken time to rate this podcast and to share it with someone else, I just encourage you to do that. Your ability to help us get the word out really makes the difference in terms of really how we're able to share these conversations with a wider audience. And so if you haven't yet done that, I encourage you to, and just want to say thank you to all of you who have taken time to listen and to share your thoughts, your comments, your feedback. It is a blessing. So for Gleaning and Gathering, God bless.